Hello and welcome to a new edition of RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior. This is the international service of the Argentine Radio, transmitting from the city of Buenos Aires via the shortwaves of WRMI, Miami Radio International, and also via internet on RAE.com.ar. My name is Fernando Farias, and I'm going to be bringing you this show in English for Friday, January 17, 2024, with news, with sports, with music. Today, speaking of music, we'll have a feature on arguably the most important rock band from Argentina, within Argentina. We always talk about Soda Stereo being the one with the most impact beyond Argentina and within Argentina as well. But in the country, I would say that Patricio Rey y sus Redonditos de Ricota are bigger. Or well bigger, because they broke up several years ago. But in terms of popularity and fandom and passion, I think that Redondos are the number one rock band from Argentina of all times. And we are devoting a feature to them on today's program. We'll also have something on Pope Francis, a National Geographic documentary on the Argentine-born pontiff. If you want to get in touch with us, send an email to qslrai@gmail.com or a letter to Maipú Street 555, and then of course Buenos Aires, Argentina. Either way, it's okay for sending reception reports if you are at the EXA. This show airs via the shortwaves of WRMI, Miami Radio International, and also via internet on our webpage, rai.com.ar. Let's get started now with the news. The Milei administration extended the 2024 budget. Heat wave in Argentina causes blackouts in Buenos Aires and in Rosario. France takes reciprocal action against Venezuela over diplomatic expulsions. Chile begins producing vehicle diesel from used cooking oil. Sports, Francisco Cerúndolo is the last Argentine remaining in the Australian Open. And these are the news. The government of Javier Milei extended the 2024 budget, which was itself a continuation of the 2023 budget. The measure was published in the official Gazette on Thursday. As a result, this year's state spending plan will also bypass Parliament, something that drew criticism even from some of Milei's allies. Critics have questioned why the budget was excluded from the extraordinary congressional sessions called by the administration. Instead, the government is prioritizing other initiatives, including the abolition of the PASO mandatory primary elections, which it hopes to pass before March. In other news, Argentina's heat wave continues with temperatures nearing 40 degrees Celsius in some provinces. The extreme heat has driven up energy demand as residents rely on air conditioning. This surge in usage has led to blackouts in Buenos Aires and in Rosario. In the latter city, electricity outages have also disrupted water supply as pumps are out of service. The National Weather Service has issued in turn heat alerts warning of health risks such as heat stroke, especially for children, the elderly, and those with pre-existing conditions. France has announced reciprocal measures against Venezuela following the expulsion of its diplomats from Caracas. In a statement, the French Foreign Ministry rejected Venezuela's allegations of interference. The Maduro government recently ordered France, Italy, and the Netherlands to reduce their diplomatic staff in Venezuela to 3 members per country within the next 48 hours. Caracas cited hostile behavior as the reason for this decision. Chile's state oil company ENAP has announced plans to produce diesel using discarded cooking oil. In a statement, the company celebrated what it called a new step towards a greener Chile. The fuel will be produced at its Aconcagua refinery using oil collected from restaurants in Valparaíso. According to ENAP, this process reduces carbon emissions by 80%. The resulting biodiesel can be used in transport, heavy machinery, and even aviation. However, it is to be noted that this type of fuel remains significantly more expensive than traditional hydrocarbons. And in sports, Francisco Cerúndolo is the only Argentine remaining in the Australian Open, the year's first Grand Slam. The world number 31 advanced to the third round after his countryman Facundo Díaz Costa retired due to an injury. And he will next face Australian Alex de Minaur, ranked 8th globally. Meanwhile, another Argentine, Tomás Echeverri, lost to American Marco Giron in a 5-set match that lasted over 4 hours, ending 7-5, 3-6, 7-5, 3-6, and 6-4. And these were the news on RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior.
The 117 cardinals who are eligible to vote in the next conclave will fly in from all over.
Only white smoke through the chimney signifies a new pontiff.
Now everyone is asking, who is the new pope and where does he come from?
Sibi nomen imposuit Franciscum.
Francis. It's the first Francis in the history of the Catholic Church.
The pope is elected. That's all. You may say nothing exciting, right?
That's a lot of excitement, you know.
I wish everybody had been here for that.
Someone by name, Jorge, selected. The way you walked him, basically very, very serene. And the fact that he just said, buonasera, good evening, like, to the people. So I think that really warmed up people's hearts.
Fratelli e sorelle,
buonasera.
And immediately he entered into conversation with the people, the crowd on St. Peter's Square.
And the crowd was ecstatic. And he was announced as Pope Francis.
No pope had taken that name. It was kind of almost thought to be a taboo, and it's kind of been the guiding post for this papacy. The pope who cares about the poor, the pope who cares about the environment.
So the choice of the name Francis was in a way programmatic of the mission. You know, Saint Francis was a man so close to the people, to the natural world.
Pope Francis came to the papacy in 2013 after the long period of scandals in the Vatican. Pope Benedict XVI was the first pope in 500 years to resign the papacy. And I think people were looking for a different sense of direction.
The mandate which the College of Cardinals gave him at the beginning, that was to reform.
A program of reform. But with this idea that the reform begins, And the call for the church is to put at the center those who are far away, who are the most suffering and the poorest.
And in changing things, there can be difficulty, there can be resistance, there can be opposition. But you still have to change things. And changing things because there are resistance or opposition doesn't make you rebellious of anything. I see him carrying on a mandate.
I believe that Pope Francis was called to rebuild, like St. Francis, this house. And this house is our planetary home, our common home, and our common human family.
This Pope is, above all, the Pope of the unexpected. He's the Pope of surprises. Nobody knows quite what he's going to do next.
But Pope Francis decided he would officiate in a juvenile detention center in Rome. The Pope washed the feet of 12 teens from all religions, including 2 Muslims. Another surprise was that among the 12 were 2 girls.
What really makes us fully human is our capacity for empathy. And Pope Francis is a great example of that.
Ah, come vorrei una chiesa povera e per I poveri.
When the Pope speaks, he speaks with the voice of not only himself and of the Catholic faith, but of 1 billion plus believers. 25% of the healthcare in the world is provided by the Catholic Church. And so their network is almost unrivaled around the world.
He's so at home with the poor. He's joyful. He listens to them. And what really struck me also was here he has really brought in a revolution of tenderness.
Francis has made clear that during this holy year, he will continue to champion the poor, the marginalized, and the oppressed.
The area he comes from is an area with incredible challenges of poverty, of global warming challenges. He's the first pope in over 1,000 years who's non-European. He is clearly a son of Argentina.
Jorge Bergoglio grew up in a family which was pretty poor. I mean, it wasn't destitute in any way, but it was very lower middle class. He grew up as the child of immigrants in Buenos Aires. So from the very beginning, he grew up with the stories of poverty, of displacement, which characterized the immigrant story.
His grandparents had come from northern Italy, the Piedmont region. And clearly this impact of watching his grandparents adapt to a new life has had a significant impact on his life and has left him with a sincere understanding of the difficulty migrants go through.
Tens of thousands of refugees and migrants risk the perilous voyage on barely seaworthy vessels that ply the waters between Lampedusa and the North African coast.
His first trip as Pope was in Lampedusa to be with refugees and migrants who are suffering.
And they're in these camps, and Pope Francis is there.
He took some families to the Vatican so that they could be accommodated here in Rome. So he's speaking also with his gestures, with his way of being.
Let us treat others with the same passion and compassion with which we want to be treated.
More and more, we're realizing migrations over the last 10 years and 20 years even, as a result of horrendous environmental problems. There are well over 100 million climate and environmental refugees now. And by 2050, they think 1.3 billion people will be part of this migration community.
He felt the pain, he understood, this is God's creation. So he connects it with the climate crisis to human suffering.
Since his rise to head of the Catholic Church, Pope Francis's papacy has been nothing short of transformative. No issue has captured his attention more than the dire fate of our warming planet.
Called Laudato Si, or Praised Be, on the care of our common home, Pope Francis's encyclical on the moral aspects of climate change and protecting the environment.
Laudato Si is one of the most important documents of our lifetime. It's an encyclical, which means a letter to Catholics, Christians, and all religions, and people without faith.
The central message in the Laudato Si is the human person and his world.
It's considered a very important teaching document, and what he has done is absolutely elicit and spark a new moral force of justice for people and care for the environment.
This is the biggest emergency that humanity has ever faced.
It was quite powerful that the Pope, in the highest leader of the Catholic Church, the leader of 1.3 billion Catholics around the world, said quite clearly, no, this is happening, it's real, we need to do something about it.
Science has facts, but we need values, And we need the sense of how do we inspire and encourage humans in their daily life, in their sufferings, in their trials, and so on. So that combination has made the Pope quite unique.
Being from Latin America, being from a country like Argentina, and what he has had to live through that have taught him to be the man he is today.
If you really want to understand Pope Francis, you need to understand that he has been shaped also by the process done in Latin America.
And to understand that is to understand a large part about what makes Pope Francis so distinctive. He brings with him the experience of his nation, but also of the Church of Latin America. Here is a man who understands the vulnerability and the chaos of people's lives and has the experience of entering into that.
Argentina, the second largest country in South America, faces an uncertain future. The military has overthrown President Perón after the nation's economy spiraled out of control. Perón, the savior of workers and the poor, has been sent into exile, but promises one day he will return and lead Argentina to become a world power.
The young Jorge Mario Bergoglio, as a teenager, grew up in the 1950s in a time of great political ferment.
Pope Francis has worked as chemist in Buenos Aires. I think it's interesting that before entering the Jesuits, you know, he had an experience as a young guy, an experience of work. So we can say he had an experience of life, you know. He was not trained in a minor seminary since the age of 12.
Jorge?
Huh?
Are you going to the tango bar after work?
Of course.
Sí, tuvo una novia, sí, tuvo alguna chica. Pero bueno, era muy cuidadoso con su vida. Hay cosas que eran muy personales de él y por ahí no las transmitía.
Señor Esther.
Thank you.
Esther Ballesteros de Carriaga was a Paraguayan woman who worked alongside him in the chemistry laboratory. She was a militant, a left-winger, and he deeply loved and admired her.
Did you analyze the final batch?
The results were the same for all the batches. So I assumed the results would be the same for the final batch.
What if your assumption is wrong? What if the final batch is different? What if there is an impurity? This is your job, Jorge. You're paid to do analysis, not to guess.
I'm sorry, Señor Esther.
When you become a doctor, remember, mistakes cost lives.
This pope had an experience of working in science and became the first pope to clearly enunciate the church's agreement with the scientific consensus that there is global warming, that the planet is going through something catastrophic that needs to be addressed.
Non può e non deve esistere contrapposizione tra la fede e la scienza.
It is the philosopher Francis Bacon, okay, who says that God gave us two books. The book of the Bible to pray with, and the book of nature to research and to discover him in the wisdom and everything that is made. So for us then, that is the first thing. Science is not opposed to faith. There are two pathways towards the same truth.
Pope Francis realized that we need to listen to the scientists. And scientists have been speaking about this for more than 50 or 60 years, I think, of Rachel Carson, 1962, The Silent Spring. I mean, not just the climate crisis, but the fact that we are destroying our common home. If we want to respond to the ecological crisis, the cry of the earth, we need to respond to the cry of the poor. That's when Pope Francis, he says, it is one cry. The cry of the earth and the cry of the poor are closely, intimately linked.
His first boss, when he was at a laboratory of chemistry, it was a woman. And I think that he's really aware of the importance of women's gift, we can say, and that he has benefited from it.
Sister Nathalie Bacar is a French sister in the Catholic Church. She basically carries the standing of a bishop, although she is not ordained a bishop. Very likely she's going to be the first woman to be appointed to a full voting membership of the Synod of Bishops.
What was very interesting, after my appointment, I have received so many messages from all over the world, and not only from people in the church, also people in the economical world or political world, and they say, oh, you know, what we see is that if even the church can change, it gives hopes that all kind of organization also can change. So it's a very, I think it's a kind of prophetic gesture and courageous gesture from Pope Francis.
The way Pope Francis has acted towards women has been one of these things where he has cracked a door, and when that door is a bit open, the floodgates will end up opening.
Certainly, we've seen a lot of movement on the issue of women in leadership in the church. Pope Francis is making the church more horizontal. And what Pope Francis is doing with this synod process is trying to find a way to be in a conversation with every Catholic around the world. Sister Nathalie Bacar helps coordinate and organize the synod process. That's the greatest listening process probably in the history of the entire world, not just the church.
Synodality is very simple. It's about journeying together. So it's a way to look at the church.
After the first phase of the listening process, they came together with a document. And what was extraordinary were the things that were mentioned in that document. Things such as the call for women's ordination in the church, the call for better ministry to LGBT persons, and for blessings for same-sex couples.
I remember when it was breaking news that he had told me, the fact that you're gay is okay. I said, Holy Father, I'm not a saint, but I certainly want to be a good person. And he said, Juan Carlos, God made you like this. God loves you like this. We're taught that. Popes are infallible. They don't make mistakes. Pope Francis makes mistakes and acknowledges his mistakes.
I think Pope Francis's trip to Chile is an insight into a leader who is able to acknowledge when he has done wrong and to try to make a change and to try to be better.
In 2018, he went to Chile, and it was very obvious that people didn't go to see Pope Francis. People realized that the level of abuse that was happening in Chile and then all over Latin America and around the world. Streets were quite empty. So in the plane back, he's asked, why did this happen?
We asked the Pope the same question, I think, three times, which was essentially, why are you believing the bishop and not the victims? What's shocking is that the Pope came home to Rome, clearly recognized he hadn't acted in a way that was right, and he sent one of the church's leading sexual abuse investigators to Chile, a Maltese archbishop named Charles Scicluna.
And they elaborated 2,600 pages of testimony and what had happened. And he wrote a letter to the world saying, I have committed a grave mistake.
Juan Carlos and the Pope had an individual meeting. It went on for several hours at the Vatican. Juan Carlos brought pictures for the Pope to see of what he looked like as a child when he was abused.
I never thought I'd have that opportunity. I was telling myself I had to be extremely brave, and said, Juan Carlos, I want to say sorry in the name of the whole Catholic Church, the Universal Church, for what they've done to you. And, you know, I started tearing up a bit, you know, because it's still emotional, you know, when I see those things and when I hear that. And he said, I want to apologize to you personally because I made it worse with you.
And so that's when we see the Pope decide to fire basically all of the bishops of Chile. And later, a few years later, we see the Pope appoint Juan Carlos Cruz as a member of the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors.
Never had anybody apologized that way to me. He helped me appreciate everything I have to live for.
When we talk the legacy of Pope Francis, I think that's one of the big legacy points, to recognize he'd done something wrong and recognize he needed to do something different.
Pope Francis, he is someone who walks towards places and situations where others want to run away.
Bergoglio was very attracted to the Jesuits. He saw in them a kind of military quality, a discipline. He liked this because he saw that it was giving him something that he lacked in his life.
Bergoglio, as a Jesuit, spent the 1960s being formed and studying at a time of enormous political change, of revolution, in fact.
The American nation cannot permit the establishment of another communist government in the Western Hemisphere.
1969, the year that Bergoglio is ordained, is also when various guerrilla groups in Argentina come into being, inspired by the Cuban Revolution, frustrated by the military dictatorship. They want Perón to come back. They want a revolutionary version of Peronism.
The much-awaited return of exiled President Perón has resulted in violence. At least 13...
Bergoglio became a priest and then became the leader of the Argentinian Jesuits. At a time of social chaos, the left and the right took to the streets, took to guns. And then within the church itself, there was a deep division in the Jesuits in Argentina between the left-wing ones who wanted to work with the poor, called the slum priests, and the more conservative ones who wanted to just educate the children of the elite.
I think it's important to note that Jorge Bergoglio was elected the provincial, the head of the Jesuit province in Argentina, at a very young age. And clearly that was an enormous task for a person of that age, and in a time of immense change and immense trial.
When the Jesuit headquarters in Rome appointed Bergoglio, they wanted him to bring the Jesuits together and to curb the extremes of the slum priests.
The one thing I think that we need to understand about papacy and about popes is that this is an institution to which every figure elected and named comes with its own personal endowments. I see him as a pope, which is a guy who's got his act together, not discouraged by anything, the challenges and all of that, who prays a lot for inspiration to be able to do what he has to do.
I see Pope Francis as a pope, not just for the church, but for the entire world. In this moment of planetary emergency, and we are not realizing that, you know, that our home is literally is crumbling. I think Pope Francis is leading the efforts of the world, of many people, in what he would say, caring for our common home.
You know, we live in an extraordinary living earth community, and it's speaking to us all the time. As the seasons change, the fall and its spectacular beauty of trees and so on, the winter and the snows coming, and then spring and new life, and summer blossoming and greenness. You know, this cycle of death and renewal, that's part of the Christian tradition.
Pope Francis is really advancing the message of love, of joy, of peace. And in such a polarized and divided world, we need, you know, to receive this message and to find ways to implement it.
What I see is a pope who has clearly defined who he is, what he believes in, and reorganized the Vatican to reflect what he thinks.
So the point is, this is so timely for the religions to come together to say justice and peace, love for humans, but love for all of creation is absolutely essential. And I think especially with the next generation, because they see the spiritual and the scientific as having something to say to our moment.
I often hear Pope Francis repeating, he says, what gives him hope in this area is, one thing is young people, children, youth. He says, what kind of world are we leaving to our children and to future generations?
But between despair and hope, there's a joyful path forward that the Pope is signaling. You are part of the solutions. You are the future of the planet. That's what he's saying to you.
Non aver paura di custodire la terra che è madre di tutto. Dobbiamo riportarla ai nostri figli, migliorata, custodita, perché è stato un prestito che loro hanno fatto a noi.
Sometimes people ask me, why did Laudato Si get so much of reception? Why was it received so well? I said, the message is beautiful, but also came from the right messenger. And that is the person we have in Pope Francis.
And international breaking news. Mankind, an intellectual agenda. The name of the proposal, RISE.
Okay, folks, let us do one of our regular musical profiles. And today I have the pleasure of introducing, no doubt at all, the most popular band in Argentine rock history. Patricio Rey y sus Redonditos de Ricota.
Superlógico, superlógico, superlógico.
We're listening to a song from the first album by Patricio Rey y sus Redonditos de Ricota, issued in 1985, called Gulp, Super Lógico. The band is from the capital of Buenos Aires province, the city of La Plata. They were formed in the year 1976, and they started performing in underground theaters as part of a multicultural experience that not only included music, but also theater, performance, dance, and also rock. We are presenting the music and the history of Patricio Rey y sus Redonditos de Ricota, mainly known as Los Redondos, simply Los Redondos. This is from their second album, Música para Pastillas, from the year 1986. The record is called October, and that song translates as Music for Pills. Los Redondos on the airwaves of RAE. Redondos, as I said, were formed in 1976 in the city of La Plata. They started playing in underground theaters of La Plata and Buenos Aires and other cities. Their first gig in the capital of Argentina was in 1978, and by the early 1980s, by word of mouth, their popularity started to increase, and they were rewarded with some airtime on Buenos Aires FM stations. Gulp, their first studio album, was released in 1984, was totally financed by the group's earnings. They did all of their career without the support of any record label. They are the par excellence Argentine rock independent band. They did this with their first album, Gulp, in 1984, and they kept on doing that for the practically 30 years the band was together. The second album, as I said, was October, and the third is one called Bang Bang Estás Liquidado, which is Bang, You Are Done, You Are Terminated, You Are Killed, which many consider to be the best album in the history of the group, filled with hits that became classics, stadium anthems of Los Redondos, such as this, Esta Estrella Era Mi Lujo, Esa Estrella Era Mi Lujo, which translates exactly as That Star Is My Luxury. Los Redondos, musical profile on the airwaves of RAE. We'll be right back.
un sogno iluso, no nos dimos nada más, solo un buen gesto.
That Star Was My Luxury by Los Redondos, whose full name, as I already mentioned, is Patricio Rey y sus Redonditos de Ricota, which is Patricio Rey, it's a name and a surname, fictional one, and it's Ricota pastries or Ricota sweets. And this is because when they started performing in the late 1970s, as I said, it was a multi-experience thing. There were people dancing, there were people acting, and they would play. It was a multi-artistic thing, in which a woman called Patricia Rey cooked ricotta sweets, and she would hand them over to the audience. And this is the genesis of the name, from the name of the cook. Well, not even a cook, but woman who made these sweets, made of ricotta. They created this fictional character who's the father of the band. It's a mythical figure that doesn't exist, a mentor, guide for the band, and not only for the band, but for the bands, plural, or las bandas, which is the name by which the fans of Los Redondos, that did nothing but grow over the years in numbers, became to be known. As I said, originally they were an underground group, but by word of mouth, their popularity in the 1980s, always in an underground circuit, increased until they reached the level of myths, that the people started talking about their concerts being something special, something unusual in the world of rock, something very mystical, not because they talk or do anything occult or dark magic, but because there was kind of a sense of belonging and being isolated from mainstream that really, really boosted the myth. And in that context, the number of fans started to grow and grow and grow until there were many. And over the years, they became known as Las Bandas. It was in their fourth album, Un Bayón para el Ojo Idiota, that Los Redondos dedicated a song to their fans known as Las Bandas. And that's this song. Go forth, bandas.
¿Y cuánto vale dormir tan custodiado?
expertos cínicos y botones dorados. ¿Y cuánto vale ser la banda nueva y andar trepando radares militares? Crispado y tus narices temblando por el miedo. ¿Y cuánto vale todo lo registrado si el sueño llega tan mal que te condena? Vamos las bandas, rajen del cielo. Vamos las bandas.
Bandas, go bands, the song Los Redondos dedicated to their fans that by the late 1980s were many, but they still could go a step higher in the early 1990s with their fifth album that really was the commercial breakthrough for them. La Mosca y la Sopa, The Fly and the Soup, gave Los Redondos the massive status they enjoy still today with songs like this. A song called Un Poco de Amor Francés that began to be played in clubs, in parties, weddings, celebrations, became part of the songbook, of the staples of celebrations. Before they released this album, La Mosca y la Sopa, there was a very tragic incident, not only for Los Redondos, but for the whole rock scene of Argentina. In April 1991, they were about to perform at the Obras Sanitarias Stadium in Buenos Aires, and a fan, Walter Bulacio, who was waiting to go into the venue to see the concert, was arrested by the police and he was brutalized. He died as a result of the injuries. Nobody has been properly convicted for this crime, but this really was the end of innocence for Los Redondos. Concerts became a little more violent because of clashes between the fans and the police, that many times would provoke the fans and they were not behaving in the best way. And that's when the band started playing in the interior, in smaller venues, to avoid attracting so much attention as they would in large cities like Buenos Aires. For most of the 1990s, they did not perform again in Buenos Aires. And amid that period, they released their only double album called Lobo Suelto and Cordero Atado, released in the year 1993, which was a success, another commercial success, and really established them as one of the number one bands in Argentina. This is a track from that double album, Lobo Suelto and Cordero Atado, entitled Yo Caníbal, Los Redondos on Riot. With Yo Caníbal, I Cannibal, from their 1993 album Lobo Suelto, Loose Wolf, and Tied Up Sheep is the name of that double album. That was followed by three more records in 1996, in 1998, and in 2001. By the time they disbanded in 2001, they have started performing, experimenting with the electronic music, with samplers and that sort of stuff. Hardcore traditional fans did not like that very much. It usually happens when bands start to experiment like that. The old timers, the old time fans, the first fans, they are not very open to those changes. Well, that happened to Los Redondos, who performed in a series of big stadiums in the second half of the 1990s, until they returned to Buenos Aires to perform in River Plate Stadium, the largest in the city, for 140,000 people. That was in the year 2000. And in 2001, they played for the last time in Córdoba, at the Chateau Carreras, soon after they announced the disbandment of the band due to, well, tensions between the leader, Carlos Solari, main lyricist, and also the main guitarist, the lead guitarist, Kai Bailinson. Both of them went on their separate ways with solo careers. But still today, people dream of the band reuniting once again. It's going to be like 15 years almost since they disbanded. And everybody wants to go to a concert of Los Redondos again to listen to this, their most popular song, Hi Hi Hi, which is from October Disc. Some say this is the song that generates the largest pogo in the world because of people going crazy, jumping and pushing each other in the stadium. That's how the leader of Los Redondos, El Indio Solari, called this moment of the concert, which is always the closure, the final song of the Redondos concerts. And also of Solari as a soloist is this song called Hi Hi Hi, which also marks the end of this musical profile on Patricio Rey y sus Redonditos de Ricota on RAE. And with that, we come to the end of today's edition of RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior in English. My name is Fernando Farias. Thank you very much for listening. We wish that you have an excellent weekend. And we invite you to join us on Monday for a new program of RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior, which is aired via the shortwaves of WRMI, Miami Radio International, and also via internet on rae.com.ar. Chao, hasta la próxima.